As you know, Baha'u'llah proclaimed the equality of men and women, and obviously women have been very deeply involved from the very beginning in promoting the teachings of the faith. I'm just now reading the book about Martha Ruth and gaining an appreciation of her, which I really didn't have. And we know that there were many women, including Tahereh, who was martyred for her faith, who contributed significantly to the development of the cause. We're now in a phase where the House of Justice is saying to the Baha'i world, women need assistance, they need to participate in the life of the community, they need to be integrated into the Baha'i community. And we know that certain messages have strongly emphasized this need for growth. And for the Baha'i International Community Office, this was very much brought to our attention during International Women's Year, when the Universal House of Justice asked especially 80 national spiritual assemblies to have activities for women. I'd like to say a word about the work with the United Nations. It is, at least my personal observation, that it makes a very great contribution to raising the level of awareness in the world concerning many of these social and economic issues. And it gathers wonderful information that is so useful to Baha'is in knowing where the world is at a particular time on any one of these issues. And I think that that's something to remember. In countries where the United Nations is not very popular for one reason or another, if we keep our eyes on the vision of the faith and its need to be global in view, and how important it is for us to be global in our thinking, that here is a source to turn to for information. What seems to happen, for instance, and I use women as an example, if the institution of the United Nations decides to focus on a particular issue, there is a tremendous outpouring of activity, and there is an analysis of what is the situation in the world. There are conferences, there are meetings, people begin to get together, and so there's a whole lot of energy generated. There seems to be a point, and it's usually when it becomes politicized, that it's very, very difficult from that point on for the United Nations to solve the problems. In the first place, they don't have the wisdom and vision that has been given to us by Baha'u'llah, or at least it cannot be spoken directly. And so they come to kind of a stalemate. And what is happening is, at the United Nations, there's more and more interest in the work of non-governmental organizations because they are freer. And that means Baha'is are freer also to share information. Well, the Baha'i world had an association with the United Nations for many years, and it was in the area of sharing information. And that's a certain level of participation in UN activities. However, once consultative status was achieved, something more was expected of the Baha'i world. And so there had to be thinking as to how we would submit information to the UN on various issues. And so I will again address women, because really, in terms of statements and information, more has gone to the United Nations on that issue than perhaps any other issue. In 1974 to 1975, several statements were submitted. And one was the preliminary inquiry on the status of women in Baha'i communities. This was a document that was prepared on the basis of a questionnaire that was sent out to Baha'i communities at that time. It took quite a long time to collect information, and really, I suppose, in strictly scientific terms, it wasn't a scientific document. And when the Universal House of Justice read the document that was submitted from the office for its approval, it was very complimentary concerning the creativity of the office in preparing that document, that did point out that in the future sociologists would perhaps prepare such information. However, In 1984, when we began to think about what shall we do for the conference in 1985 that will end the decade for women, we are still sending out the questionnaires, and we're still not probably professional in terms of the social scientists, but we felt we really needed, again, more information as to what was happening in Baha'i communities related to women, and so another questionnaire has been sent out, and that is what Betty DeRusso is going to sort of give us an idea, a little preliminary idea, as to what kind of information we're beginning to receive. A couple of points that are interesting, I think, to Baha'is in general, because the question always arises as to whether we have an effect at the UN in the type of activities that we participate. And in 1974, one of the earliest statements to the Branch for the Advancement of Women stressed the importance of educating women as the as the educators of the next generation, and if a choice had to be made, that women should be granted the education first. Now, that had not appeared, as far as we knew, in a UN document up until that point. And, you know, who knows? There's no way to, you know, document that it was because of the statement that the UN began to talk about the education of women. But certainly, there was a vast increase of emphasis on the education of women and emphasizing that it was really more important to educate women than men. And this seems to be, you know, carrying on and strengthening as the time passes. Some of it, of course, is also due to just plain experience. When they get the facts, it's obvious that if you don't educate women, they cannot address the problems of their children or their family, etc. Another statement in 1980 was to the World Conference, mid-decade World Conference on Women, which was held in Copenhagen. And in that statement, we emphasized two points, the first being the effect that response to an accepted authority can bring, that it produces motivation for change, and we felt that this was a very important item to bring to the attention of the conference. And I don't think that we said specifically that, did we say Mission Baha'u'llah in that statement? I have it here, but I don't want to go into it. But we've made it clear anyway that Baha'is believe that this authority was essential to bringing about change and the motivation for change. The second point that was made was that the education of men was extremely important, and that without the education of men, there could be no basic change in the attitudes toward women. And we are hearing this increasingly, where women are women who have professional positions at the UN are more and more advocating a decade for men to educate, you know, on the status of men. And this seems to become is becoming more and more acceptable. Another point is that since the Baha'i international community is submitting this type of information, that the other side of the coin is this what is happening in the Baha'i community? And so then it comes to me, to you, are we reflecting these changes that we are saying to the United Nations are happening in the Baha'i community? And so we always come back to the struggle of the individual in promoting within him or herself that kind of change that is more and more going to make us the kind of people that Baha'u'llah envisages will inhabit this earth when there is peace. And we also know that the role of women in bringing about that universal peace is very, very profound. I don't know if we understand yet what that really means, but there is increasing emphasis on that in the Baha'i world and also in the world at large, what role will women play. Now, just briefly, before I turn it over to Betty, just to update you on the preparations for the conference that will end the decade and will take place in Nairobi, Kenya in July of next year. There's a major conference is always a wonderful opportunity for the Baha'i international community to gain a lot of recognition and the prestige of presenting its views to various meetings throughout the world, and there is no difference this time. The regional United Nations Economic Commissions are having preparatory meetings in Japan, in Tanzania, in Vienna, and tentatively in Cuba. Already the meeting has been held in Japan, and this gave an opportunity to Japanese women to participate in a UN event and give them the recognition that's very, very difficult in Japan to attain. And they were thrilled, and they did a marvelous job and did an excellent statement to the conference. They were very nervous, but they did an oral statement, also a written statement. A very nice packet of material was distributed. We're now working on the one in Tanzania, and we know that a representative of the branch office in Geneva will represent the Baha'i International Community in Vienna, and we will also be sending a representative to Latin America. There's also increased contact with international organizations, non-governmental organizations, and that is something that Baha'is at all levels can be aware of and try to tie into activities that may be occurring at national level and at local level. We know that there are certain organizations that branches of the Associated Country Women of the World, for example, are the kind of organizations that are very probably very productive to engage in cooperation. Often the International Council of Women branches of the International Council of Women provide opportunity for collaboration also. We also have an opportunity at headquarters to make contacts with women who may be connected with the missions or who may be delegates to the General Assembly. And as you know, there's a minority of women who represent their governments in these bodies, perhaps 6 or 7% of the total membership of the General Assembly during any session would be women. So we do try to make contacts with these women and to engage them in conversation and share information about the Baha'i International community. We know also that the Universal House of Justice has expressed an interest in increased projects for women and has mentioned particularly United Nations Voluntary Fund for Women, which was established in 1975 and has been very successful. Dealing with women's projects seems to be quite different from the usual projects that are established as a development aid project. Usually they cost very little. And contributing countries often think of big projects and a lot of money. And so often this is a detriment to women if you only need $400, $500, $600. I mean, a lot of aid agencies don't seem to know what to do with that. So the Voluntary Fund for Women is a very small capital fund, probably $3 or $4 million, but has been very much commended for the work it has done in supplying money for projects for women, and also promoting a revolving fund approach of money being given, and when it has accomplished what it needs to accomplish, passed on to other women, passed on to other women. It is not expected to be returned to the agency. Now, in the preliminary inquiry that was published in 1975, we noticed certain things happening at sort of a very preliminary level. For instance, we had a report from the Solomon Islands in which it was reported that the men in the Solomon Islands had encouraged women to have a conference, and they had the men had provided the child care and the food and the cleaning up so that the women could attend. This was really, as I recall, the first indication that we had that in some parts of the world the men were arising and trying to encourage the women to participate in activities. In Africa, I remember we received a very sweet, you know, a lot of these actions that are taken are from the heart, and because they're taken, it permits other people to change. We read about a man in Africa who brought his wife to a meeting when this was not the acceptable thing to do, and it was a very traumatic experience for him, and he separated himself from her once he delivered her to the meeting. But you see, it had happened, and then it could happen again. Now, this time, at that time also, we received no information from developed countries. Or if we did, the answer was, this is not an issue for us. It is not a problem for us. And that was really without exception. Well, it's very interesting. This is not happening this time, as you'll see from what Betty is going to tell you. And we have another question in there about what are the traditional, what are the attitudes and traditional cultural barriers that are preventing the growth and development of women. And we're getting some very interesting replies, and we're receiving replies from developed countries, and only one has said so far that it's not a problem. So we're getting much fuller replies, and we see a lot of change. And now I want to pass this over to Mrs. Betty DeArujo, who, although is designated as a volunteer of the Baha'i International community rather than a member of the paid staff, has made a very valuable contribution, especially in this area, because it is very difficult in the office to find the time and the quietness to be able to prepare statements. And really, Betty has been the person who has been mostly responsible for the preparation of the contents of these statements that have gone to the UN. And I'm going to turn this over to Betty now. Thank you very much.
I think you may wonder this morning why Baha'is are so interested in this question of women, because certainly you don't hear very much of it in the United Nations agency. I think it's interesting that in their whole development strategy, for example, there's a couple of very brief mentions of women, and yet we know that in many of the developing countries, particularly in Africa and some of the other countries of the world, women are doing the major part of the agricultural work, the marketing of the products, the taking care of the children, and so on. And I think in some countries of Africa, it's as much as 90% of the agricultural work is done by the women alone. And sometimes, in many countries, it's from 70-80%. So really, it's a major problem in the world that women are not really becoming educated. I think we saw in the film last night that it's so difficult in many countries of the world to break through these traditional patterns that people have, that women are not to be educated and that they are not to participate in any way except in the, you know, sort of drudgery jobs of the country. So now the declaration, as Mary says, of the Baha'i faith, that the equality of men and women is a very important issue, has brought us a whole new view of this. The Guardian said that the Baha'i point of view on the equality of men and women became known in the world, that it would cause great attention to be paid to the faith. And I think this is one of the reasons why it's been easier, perhaps, for us at the Baha'i International community to enter this area, because the time is right for this. There's a great movement, an awakening of women all over the world, and even in countries where women are not accustomed to speak in the presence of men, you will find that they are very responsive. You'll find that in many Baha'i communities, for example, where activities are organized particularly for women, women freely speak. They want to have the opportunity to participate. And in most of the Baha'i communities of the world, they're very easily elected on our administrative bodies because of our principle of not electioneering, not running for office, by secret ballot, choosing our administrative officials by secret ballot. Women are very easily absorbed into the administrative structure of the faith. And you will find often that in many countries, women, I think in most countries of the world, I don't think there's really any place in Baha'i communities that women are not serving on local administrative bodies and national administrative bodies. So they're participating in this consultation process. And they're elected officers. They're elected chairmen, secretaries. In Africa, often they're elected the treasurers, because they have marvelous experience in handling the money in Africa. So I'm just going to read you a few, or just give you a little idea of the kinds of things that Baha'i communities have done that have come in as a result of this survey, because I think they give an idea of the variety, the kind of thing we were talking about yesterday, the kind of creativity that Baha'is already have, and the assurance, I think, that comes through that we have answers to these problems. We were talking this morning for a few minutes with Mr. Arbaugh, and he says we don't realize sometimes our strengths. And I think this comes through to all of us that are in association at the United Nations, and also the people out in these countries who begin to see that the rest of the world has no answers, and that we do truly have the divine commandments, which give us every direction that we need to go ahead, and to go ahead with a wonderful assurance and confidence about what we can do to help the improve the conditions of the world. It's very interesting to see, just one additional note, that the United Nations agencies often start from the periphery of a problem. You think UNICEF is an example of this. They started with a concern for children. From there, they moved to the concern for mothers, because children are connected with mothers. And from there, they had to move to families. And so now they are very much engaged in really fundamental problems of changing the structure of society, because you cannot go in and give temporary assistance to mothers, which is like welfare assistance, which is very short-lived and doesn't have any long-range implications for the real education of mothers or for the survival of children. They found interesting components in their studies now, which we should be very interested in, that the love and concern of parents for their children makes every difference on how they take on food and grow and flourish as a result of it. Good nutrition is not the answer to physical, unwellness. You have to have, in addition, that component of love. So you see, if you do not have educated women, families that will have cohesiveness, the father in support also of in that family unit, you really are in serious trouble, and that's really what the world is facing now. You'll see, for example, in the Central African Republic, they've had discussions on married life, on the education of children. They've been engaged in literacy school. The assemblies have encouraged women to join together in working their fields in rotation. In other words, bring a unity to make it easier for them to do the work that they are engaged in. In Papua New Guinea, the LSA in Kimba, West New Britain province, formed a women's group, and they built a drum oven where they baked bread for their personal use and for sale. They attracted the non-Baha'i women who have joined the club. And the idea and the labor in this project came from the local community. Then this group affiliated with the National Women's Committee, or Women's Council that Mary was speaking about, has been established in many countries. They had a secret ballot for officers, and an illiterate woman was elected the chairperson. One woman was from the National Council, who was a representative there, was so amazed at this, that a literate woman would be elected, because there were some other women, you know, that were fairly well educated. But it caused her to investigate the faith. I think it's really interesting. In Samoa, 75% of the teaching work is done by the women. This is Baha'i teaching work. And through this, they say, we can see the real essence of the education of women. I think that's interesting, the importance of the education of women, because in their country, most of the women are doing the teaching work. In Nigeria, a letter from the Baha'i women helped to educate them about the history and teachings, a newsletter for the Baha'i women helped to educate them about the history and teachings of the faith, and also gave them information on practical subjects. Women benefited who could not get to meetings. One newsletter was directed to men and how they could help in releasing the potential of men. So in other words, Baha'i communities are becoming aware of the tremendous problem that exists. That this, the quality of men and women is not something that concerns women, which is really what we often feel when we're at United Nations meetings. It is a problem which concerns men equally. And so it is going to be a real revolution when the Baha'i teachings begin to, you know, change our whole relationship in the family. In Rwanda, conferences were organized to improve the status of women for couples on the purposes of marriage. You see this a lot in the replies that have come in. Many, many countries have undertaken conferences to improve marriage, sense of marriage responsibility, a responsibility toward the children in marriage, and so on. Because in many countries you find there is no responsibility. The women are bearing the responsibility for raising the children, and often the men disappear. Or the children are fathered by many there are many fathers involved with one woman, so on. It's really very difficult. And this is interesting. This was something that even one Baha'i did, but which was reported from St. Lucia. The National Council of Women, through the suggestion of the Baha'i representative, is now attempting to have all court cases involving violence to women and children held in camera or on camera. I think this is interesting because in that particular place they're having a great deal of trouble with violence toward women and toward children. So the Baha'i see an opportunity, they see a way of creative input, and they make the suggestion. And it's valuable, and you see other people are willing to take it up. They see the that we have gone to the core of the problems, and we know what we're doing. And so they catch on to that. They're interested in that. And that's why I think we should have confidence. Another place, I don't know whether I should mention all these places, because in the end we're not sure whether we're going to leave the the countries out or not, that women are learning their right to be married to the father of their children. The law calling for chastity and forbidding adultery, a part of Baha'i life, the NSA says, will change the social pattern common among women to have children by several fathers, none of whom will marry them, and few will ever take a continued concern for the care of her children, for the care of the children. Men and women are marrying and understanding responsibility they share for the education of their children. In other words, the NSAs are doing an education job among Baha'is, and it reaches out to the non-Baha'i community as well in the importance of these relationships and how we can, again, have stability in the family. There's been also some very spectacular large activities organized by Baha'is. In Peru, for example, I recall that they had a meeting in which I think there's some five countries represented, just for women. Because as you know, the Universal House of Justice has asked, I think, 80, I don't know if Mary mentioned this or not, 80 national spiritual assemblies to organize activities particularly for the women, so that we give attention to this principle. And many national assemblies have taken tremendous initiatives in this regard. And the cross-cultural thing, I wanted to mention that too. The cross-cultural thing comes through as a very important contribution, because as we see ourselves in relationship to other cultures, it's an educative process. And I think the Baha'is have really, the Guardian planned that for us, didn't he? And of course, Abdu'l-Baha planned it in the Tablets of the Divine Plan, the fact that we went all over the world, we learned from other cultures, and I think this cross-cultural activity has been the most valuable help to us in realizing the prejudices that we have in our own cultures, the traditional patterns that we have in our own cultures, and it's helped us break through on those things. Well, I don't want to take up any more time, because I think you might be interested to know that we have some 60 replies already, and they're coming in about 3 and 4 a day now. So I think there's going to be a wide representation of the NSAs on this.
Many of the government people we first met thought that the Baha'is were just a little group in Bolivia, for example. And then they realized that we have a support system all over the world. We can draw upon people from Africa, from India, from the States, from Canada, who have all these specialties.